Welcome everyone to this episode of the Invita podcast. So basically we've got second year students who are here as representatives of the department, and we're in a collaboration with Oslo Met University. I think the main difference maybe to point out at the beginning is that we have a four-year program. So our students are kind of halfway through that program with minimal clinical exposure, whereas the Oslo Met students are in their final year and have far more patient contact. So that's been one big difference between the two programs. And so this visit, this student exchange, has been part of a bigger research project where we're looking at internationalization at home. So it's a funded project through a Norwegian organization. And so one of the aspects is the student exchange. We're looking at developing a set of online resources for other programs who are interested in internationalization at home. And then we also have a student assignment component where our students and the Norwegian students kind of do work online and give each other feedback. And the idea is that we're going to build out that online component so we have more collaborators and more institutions joining over time. And so the main idea is that we're trying to understand how culture and society and kind of the values and beliefs that come linked to cultural differences, how those influence the way that we think about rehab and patients. So that's the context, the background. Is there anything that you wanted to start with?
I suppose, I mean, I'd be interested just to get a sense at a very sort of top level about what experiences have been, what the things are that have sort of jumped out as the kind of key learning points from both the South African and the Norwegian students at this point.
Okay, so like just a high level reflection, I guess, on what are the main differences. Don't all go at once.
A lot of the Norwegian students rely on public transport to get to university every day, whereas the South African students need to find their own transport, so private transport, yeah.
Another big difference is the fact that the education is absolutely free, so everybody has an opportunity to be able to go to an institute instead of being held back by a minister circumstances.
Yeah. So like one of the big differences in Norway, I think something like 35% of the population has access to higher education. In South Africa, it's something like 3%. And then I guess the other thing is, you know, in South Africa, only poor people take public transport. In Norway, almost everyone takes it. And so at home, if you don't have a car, getting around is really, really difficult. And so our students they really struggle to move around between clinical placements.
With regards to education, we noted that older students go to varsity more than what the younger students do, whereas in South Africa, you kind of pushed from a young age to start off early and to start your career early, whereas here, because you have available access at whatever age, there's more opportunities for you guys as compared to us.
Now, the interesting thing is that most Norwegian students have 2 degrees or are currently studying their second degree. In South Africa, the monetary cost of that would be very high.
Yeah, that's something I really like about Norway, that we are able to take several degrees, because it's really hard to know what you want to be later in your life when you're at the age of 18. For example, myself, I didn't know what I wanted to work with. I think at the age of 20, I just started to realize that I wanted to be a physiotherapist. And it's never too late here to be a physiotherapist or to work with something else. And we also have students that are in their 40s or 50s at the university here.
How might that influence the way that you think about your studies or your approach to your studies? If you're coming into the program either at 25 years old, so you've got some life experience, maybe you've traveled, or you have a degree, how does that change the way that you approach your studies and kind of the way that you think about physiotherapy?
I think in some ways you have a lot more life experience, and also that does something with your perspective on both life and other people. But in some ways, some students may just take it too easy and not starting thinking about actually working with this before later on. So it can be both positive and negative, I think.
Can I ask that question? When you guys go to university, do you think there's a lot less pressure on you? Do you think there's a lot less pressure on you guys to perform well at university because it's free? Because you don't have to personally worry about the cost?
I think we make a lot of pressure for ourselves, or like we, it's a generation who likes to do it very well. I think actually it's still quite a lot of pressure, but it makes it easier to take another path if you want to do what you started with, I think. It's easier to change on the way, but still, when you first start doing one study, I think lots of people are really interested in doing it well.
And also, since everyone can apply for the same studies, there, like the popular studies has waiting lists and you have to do good to come in to school, get in.
You need to have really, really well grades.
Yeah, and then also we are educating so many people, there are a lot of pressure to get the jobs you really want. And people still think about money because we take loans, or not everyone, but many people take loans to afford staying in Oslo and study. And if you don't get your exam, you have to pay for it later. So there is still a pressure, but maybe it's less.
And probably a different one as well.
Yes.
Can I sort of jump in and ask a question? So I was interested in the sort of discussion about the age at which people might able to make the choice about what sort of career path they want to take, because it's definitely something that I think here in the UK, I mean, most people have to make some sort of conscious decision when they're 16, really, in terms of what A levels they're going to then take, you know, which will then have an influence on whether or not they can get into a physiotherapy course after that. And then I was also interested in both Norway and South Africa, whether kind of going to study is seen as being like a kind of lifestyle choice as well. So in the UK, we're pushing up towards 50% of people going to some sort of higher education degree program. And for a lot of people, you know, the chance to move away from home and to sort of, you know, it's like we're learning to live independently, and that's seen as much as like the personal element of it as well as the academic, you know, course that you're going to study. So is that also part of the thing? And kind of tied in with that, this is kind of a long-winded question, but how many people tend to live at home and kind of commute into study versus how many people live at the university and are quite a distance from home across the two countries? Is there any difference in that?
From my experience, I noticed here in Norway that not many of the students live in the city centre where the university is based. So that's where the public transport plays a huge role in getting the students to university and back home. Whereas in Cape Town, there's a huge problem with accommodation, whereas not everyone has availability to it because, I mean, of limited spaces. We have many people coming from outside the country, even coming in or even out of Cape Town alone. So most obviously they are giving preference because they don't live in Cape Town. And then obviously that leaves a lot of the students that has to travel from home to university.
I think lots of people in Norway also move from home really early. And some do in high school and some do when they go to university. But it's really, really normal to move away from home when you're like around 18, 19 years old. Seems like lots of you live at home for longer, I think.
I think in South Africa, it's more normal to leave home like mid-20s rather than 18 because of the cost involved in living on your own. And even if you are a student who lives near the university but not under your parents' roof, your parents are still the ones paying for it.
I wanted to ask you guys, one of the questions that Ben started with was saying that by the age of 16 you've got to start making subject choices. You know, what was your experience when you were in high school? At what point did you have to start thinking about what is my career going to be in order to inform your subject choices?
For me, it was in grade 9. They sort of said, you need to decide what you want to be now, and you need to work towards that, and that's what you're going to be for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So for me, when I changed studies, it was very taboo because no one does that. No one just switches their degrees after they're finished and stuff like that.
So we just to pick up on what Brandon was saying, we're more reluctant in our program to take someone who's busy with another degree. If you finished a first degree, you know, that's fine, we'll look at you. But then the number of places that we have available for people who are coming in, you know, not immediately out of high school is very limited. So having a first degree is a disadvantage when you're applying for the program. And then being, you know, just being older is also a disadvantage.
Yeah, and just to add on, when you have to choose what career path you're going to follow, like from my experience in high school, what happens most of the time is from in grade 9, when you know that you're going to go to grade 10, where you need to sort of like choose a stream in which you have to follow. So I think from my experience, when you're in grade 9, you don't really worry about the specific, like the specific path that you're going to follow. It's always about choosing the right subject. So it's all about the bigger umbrella, like a course. It's either you want to do health sciences related. You don't have to worry about which one exactly, but you just feel like as long as you know that I'm going to be working with people, health sciences, or I need to do the commercial subjects, because that is part and parcel of what is more important when you have to apply.
Yeah.
So because in return, you have to choose the stream that you're going to be focusing on. The career path, oftentimes it comes later on. That's when you can specifically choose one that you're going to follow or that you're going to apply for when possibly around grade 11, because yeah, that's where I think most of the career exhibition, that's where it all starts. That's where you need to start thinking of which career am I going to do, what's my first choice, my second choice, and so on.
Yeah.
But from an earlier age, it's all about where do you see yourself, commercial, health sciences, who do you want to work with, and everything, so on.
So by the age of kind of 15, 16, you're already having to start deciding, if not the specific career, then the kind of more or less general domain of practice that you, so either I'm going to be in marketing or I'm going to be, you know, in some way artistic, or, you know, so you've got to make decisions, quite important decisions, at a very young age.
Which stream that you're going to follow, even if you're not very specific, but at least you have an idea of this is where I'm going to be,
okay.
So I'm going to be working.
But do you, because of that, have many people that work with people because they chose that path when they were 16, and then when they're in their 30s and working with people, they're thinking like, oh, I actually don't want to work with people, but they have to. Do you have many of those people?
We have a lot of people in our program who, after the first year, have realized that they've made the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's such a high negative connotation with dropping out of a course, they'll finish the course just because if they drop out, their chances of getting in anywhere else are so small. And so we've got people who will finish degree, I'd say probably 20, I'm guessing, but maybe up to 25% of people who graduate with a physiotherapy degree have decided when they graduate that they don't ever want to work as a physiotherapist. And I think it's because of that, kind of making that decision, you're committed, and the kind of negative pushback that you'll get if you drop out is kind of so big that, you know, it makes more sense for you to spend the next 3 years studying something that you don't want to do.
But are you still going to work with people then, because it's so hard to take a second degree?
They might go and do something. So what's very common is for people to do medical repping. So they go and work for a company that sells medical equipment. So they've got the background, but they move more into a sales domain.
I think what's difficult also in schools with giving children the responsibility to make decisions so early is that there's a lot of pressure to take on big subjects, whether it may be maths and science and biology, for example, because parents have this influence on their children as to whether you are going to make money. And because living a quality life in South Africa is really based on your income, children, whether it's what they actually enjoy, is pushed aside, because the question that is posed to them is, are you going to be able to make money in this field? So that's also a really big factor in deciding what you want to do at such a young age.
I think that happens a lot in Norway as well, but I think because it's easier to change path afterwards, lots of people do what their parents think is best, like in high school. Maybe they take like physics or math or something, and then they change afterwards and do something else. But that's easier here.
Mm.
And I think you are more likely to listen to your parents when you're 18 than maybe 20 or 25.
Because there's a small cost in changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think that at 16, in a way, it also feels like you're making really big choices. Feels like you're choosing what to do for the rest of your life. But then when you get older, you notice that it is easier, you can change. And also it has been changing, like our parents probably have the, most of our parents have the same job their whole working career, whereas our generation probably has to change paths because because some jobs will not be available anymore. And
just on the parents thing, I also think that going to university in South Africa has a lot to do with the TCD. Because in the past, it wasn't where our parents were just able to say, I want to go to this university or I want to go to that. So most of them were disadvantaged. Like, I'm referring to my parents also. It wasn't an option for them because their parents couldn't say to them, okay, which university would you like to go through and what could you do? But no, they had to go straight into work. So now that we're here, we are given the opportunity and they're basically telling us to take it with open arms.
Considering that also the reasons why people, what happens most of the time is when you have a passion for something, even when you're young, you already know. But the problem is what happens oftentimes is passion does not always allow you to meet the criteria for admission. So for instance, there are a lot of people who love certain things, but because of the rules in high schools and so on, you need to get certain marks in order to be admitted to the degree that you want. And also, of course, the cost of living. Because oftentimes some people do well, but then they have to you have to travel far, and your family does not have that kind of money. You don't have much information as to where you can get funding. So funding is also another reason why people have to sort of like flip to whatever is around. And also considering the issue of the marks. There are certain students, there are subjects that you have to take. Say, in all of those subjects, there's always one subject that is directly related to what you're going to be working with. And oftentimes you may be good in that, but because you need a certain amount of points, you might not get it. For instance, for example, I know a friend of mine who is good in drawing, and there is a subject that specializes in drawing. He's good in drawing, but in order to pass matric and go and pursue something like that, you don't just need drawing, you need to also have like other subjects coming in. So that's one of the reasons why some people end up going to the backup course, and that's on a backup course, you not really enjoy it, so it kind of affects how you get to really experience it, or how you deal with people in that sense.
But I think that's the same here. Passion doesn't guarantee you anything. Just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean you're going to be good at it. It just helps make it easier to do. So I think the emphasis on how you perform in school matters a lot here as well as it does in South Africa.
I want to pull Ben in. He's got a question that he wants to ask.
Yeah, so I was interested. Somebody kind of mentioned about money and earnings just in the sort of ether earlier. So I was interested in whether physiotherapy is kind of seen the same as a profession and as like a career choice in Norway and in South Africa. So does it have the same sort of prestige? Is it the same sort of job security? Those kind of reasons. And whether or not you guys have had any conversations about the reasons why you chose it. And, are those reasons similar for people picking it as a career in Norway to people picking it as a career in South Africa?
Do you guys want to come in? Why did you choose physiotherapy?
Oh, that's a long story.
So was it for fame and glory?
No. I studied something that had a lot with psychology, thank you. I studied music therapy and there was a lot about psychology there. And then after a while, I realized that I'm much more interested in the human body, not only the brain. And I think I've always known that I want to work with people, but that led me to doing physiotherapy.
I have a degree in sports science from before. I wanted to be a teacher, but the studies were different and I applied for physiotherapy and I started here, and I think it's interesting to get to know even more about the body, and that's why I'm still here.
Yeah, I have a degree in business before, so that's a totally different field. But I realized while I was studying, I wanted to work with people and not just thinking about profit. So that's why I kind of looked into other fields, and I'm really interested in the human body and health. So that's why I decided physical therapy. And I also know lots of students that decided to do physiotherapy because of they being injured before and have experience with physiotherapists. What about you guys?
I chose to study physiotherapy based on passion. I started with engineering, and decided that I didn't like the kind of work I was going to be doing. And I've always had a interest in the human body, how it works. So that's how I chose physiotherapy. But I know that with me switching degrees and getting to the point where I could actually study physiotherapy came with a huge cost. Like I work two jobs just to afford to pay rent and live so that I can study physiotherapy.
I was one of those students at high school where, you know, when the family comes in and asks, what would you like to be one day? And then I was one of those that just said, I don't know. And so it came to a point where I actually had to go see a psychologist based on, and they helped with my like career paths. And so they, at the end of the day, didn't actually help because they told me, oh no, you can do anything if you put your mind to it. And so then I just told them my mom could have told me that. But I was quite interested in helping people. And like you said, I had an experience with a physio when I broke my arm and I was quite impressed with what she did. And so it just went on from there.
And I think I was rather lucky because like Brandon said, he had experience in one degree and he didn't enjoy it. So there was also that pressure on me that if I get into this degree, I have to finish it. So I was lucky that once I got into it, I'm actually enjoying every second of it and that I don't have those thoughts, but this isn't for me. What about the financial strain? What's my next step that a lot of students in South Africa go through?
Yeah, it's for me. I've always had never really stick to one career. To me, when it comes to what I wanted to be, it was like a song. It trended for a month or for 2 months. I'd say I want to be a cop, and then the next month I would say something up until I went to matric, and then they were like, now you need to decide. Now whatever that's been going on, it needs to stop. And I knew that one way or another, because of my uncle who was a medical doctor, I knew that I wanted to work with people, because one way or another I knew that in a way we always talk about how we would work together and build our own private practice and so on. And that's when I had to sort of do some small research as to what can I do in health, and considering my personal strengths and weaknesses, and considering that I'm not so good in a lot of things, so I react very strongly to certain things. So I knew that things that involved me dealing hand to hand, though I'm helping people, dealing hand to hand with blood and seeing many traumatic experiences will not be that good for me. And according to my research, I felt like physio is something that I don't have to see patients, I don't have to deal with blood and seeing in regular basis, because I'm afraid of blood. I was afraid of even my own blood and so. And yeah, so then I started doing research on more and more about physio, and then I started loving it. And until the day I attended my first class, I did not really have a clear picture of what it is. But since then, I've since enjoyed, and more and more about it, the more I realized that, I did not make that choice.
So I think it's pretty clear that it's just fame and glory. That's all you want. It's just prestige, status, and a massive income.
To help people?
Actually, in Norway, the physiotherapists are average.
Yeah, it's the same
with us. So
they don't earn that much money, really. Yeah. So.
But you guys didn't mention it. The level of prestige associated with physiotherapy in South Africa is very high. So even though you didn't admit to it, there's this public perception that physiotherapy is kind of just one step below medicine. And so doctors and physiotherapists are really highly regarded in society in general, even though the pay is fairly standard. You wanted to come in, Ben?
Yeah, so kind of taking that conversation on a step in terms of the internationalisation aspect, did anyone choose it as a career because it's a career that does afford you the opportunity to move and to work in different places around the world?
I did.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
I chose physio because I believed, and being here kind of confirms it, that physio is physio. Wherever you go in the world, it will be the same. And with the state of our country and the rate of its deterioration, if I ever needed to get out of the country, I could.
I think what I like about physio, because of its international status, is that I can go to a first world country like Norway, and I can take their knowledge and bring it back to a country like South Africa, because the principles are the same. So that's what I really am taking the most out of this experience, is that how can we use their policies and implement it in the smallest ways in South Africa?
I think also the reason I chose business in after high school was because I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I would like to work with something that could be international, or you could, yeah, not just in Norway. So I guess that's also part of why I chose physical therapy as the next one, because that's also, as you said, it's possible to bring it international.
Did that fit into any of your considerations when you were thinking about whether to apply for physio? The fact that it might give you opportunities to travel?
It did, because I'm from the Netherlands and I don't know if I will stay in Norway. So for me, it was kind of important to know that if I ever want to move back to the Netherlands or another country, that I could work there with something I like. So for me, it was kind of important in my decision, yeah.
I think health is always relevant. And I think that was one of the reasons why I chose it. Both of my degrees, really, because you can use it lost in Norway, even though the country will change, and you can use it in other countries. So you have lots of possibilities.
One thing I also realized about the health system is that the body is always the same. So, well, the body in South Africa is the same as someone's body in Norway. We all have the same organs. We all have the same vessels, the same body, basically. So that was one thing that was also an attractive thing for me about physio, is that if I'm going to go to Norway, I can still treat that patient the same way I would treat someone at home.
Yesterday we were at a rehab center, and it was interesting. I could have taken one of our final year students and just, you know, dropped them in with the patient, and they could have just taken over from the physiotherapist who was managing the patient, and it would have just looked exactly the same. And so, like, that was kind of just kind of adds to this idea that you really can just move around. And but one of the reasons I studied physiotherapy was because I thought that I'd be able to travel.
And so, in terms of this kind of experience, where you've obviously got sort of students traveling between countries and sort of experiencing both the education and the clinical practice there, it sounds like from some of the things that people were saying then that actually part of the learning is to realise how similar things are rather than how different they are. So although, you know, we often might think about internationalisation as being like exposure to difference, and for sure that's part of it, I kind of wonder if, like, from a seeing physio as a global profession, part of it is about being exposure to global similarities and sort of realising that actually that allows us to learn from each other and to kind of work in different places, and that that's as much of an important outcome out of this kind of thing as any kind of, oh my goodness, you do this completely differently here. You know, although those might be things that are easy to talk about sometimes.
So one of the things that I noticed is that at an individual level, so you working one-on-one with the patient looks exactly the same. What a big thing that is very different is at the level of society. There's a set of kind of core foundational values that underpin a lot of Norwegian society that we don't have in South Africa. And what that does is that influences decisions around healthcare, education. So the fact that everyone in the country is afforded free education, you know, all the way up to postgraduate level, the fact that the health system really is geared to make sure that everyone in society has a safety net. You know, those are the kinds of like values that inform kind of policy and decision making at a very high level, that looks completely different in South Africa. And so at the individual level, we see its similarity. Like, we can see a lot of the same thing in terms of managing their patients in a one-on-one situation. But the context in which that interaction happens is completely different. And I think that context is informed by this kind of underlying values that inform society kind of from the top down and from the bottom up. I think individuals in Norway, I think, have this belief that everyone should be cared for and protected, in addition to the policies and kind of laws that kind of are more top down.
Yeah, and I also think that because of the healthcare system models, they are different in Norway and South Africa. But I mean, as Kelsey said, the body is always the same. But the culture and the social norms, I think that also has something to do with how our perspective is on health and how we help people as physiotherapists. And I think that's why it's that important that you guys are here and can experience that and really see the differences.
I would think that one difference that a physio in Norway would experience with a patient in South Africa is the attitude of the patient. So in Norway, because everybody is cared for and they have access to environments that enable them to be active all the time or healthy all the time, in South Africa, the majority, and even those that do have, they have to make important decisions as to what's a priority for them. So if they, if their attitude is that I need to go to work, so I know my physio told me that I need to do a certain set of exercises, but I have to, I have other things to look after, then the rate of progression in South Africa might be a bit slower than the rate of progression of a patient in Norway. And also it's your patient's attitude towards your health professional treating you as well. Yeah, I saw that many of the patients were motivated, but it's because they are allowed to do and to be able to be safe in the environments that they are. Whereas in South Africa, because you go back to a context that's not very enabling, your patient in rehab won't really respond to you with as much motivation as they do here. So that's my observation.
We tend to see a lot of passivity in patients. And so patients sit back and want to be treated. Whereas here, I think you work more collaboratively with patients and they take a more active role in kind of making decisions about management. And I think what you're saying about priorities is important. So in South Africa, we might suggest to a patient that you need to come back in a week, but the patient's already taken a day off work. And so like it's cost them money to come to the clinic. They've missed out on a day's salary because they're cash paid, so because they're laborers. And so that's another day of income that they're going to lose. And so oftentimes we just have patients who can't come back. And so, you know, we train you to treat people over a period of time, and then you get out into clinical practice and you book patients for a kind of a series of appointments, and that you never see them again. Because in their mind, they've got to prioritize what's more important, like food or coming to see the physiotherapist.
And also I saw that with the physios that were treating patients, they educated patients a lot with the idea in mind that I might not see this patient again. Whereas in South Africa, even as second year students, we're all about treating, but we never tell a patient, okay, but if I don't see you again, this is what you should do. So we don't prepare a patient to live with the chance that they might not see us again. So it's like we're making them depend on us all the time, and we're not really making them independent, which is a very important aspect of our job, I think.
I think in defense of the physiotherapy program, we do spend a lot of time talking about education and preparing patients. But I think that we will talk about that a lot more kind of as you develop through the program. So that patient education component, I think, is a big part of what we do. But I think it's just not something that you've had much exposure to.
I think a very big difference between our physiotherapists and the physiotherapists in Norway is that they ask the question, what would you like to end up doing? And we ask the question, what do you need to do? So there's a bigger focus on the quality of life that your patient would like to live. Whereas us, we, for example, say, okay, you need to be able to walk 100 meters unassisted. That's fine. We'll get you to do that. They ask the question, would you like to go for walks in the park? Then that's a personalized goal for that patient that they will help achieve.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, we would say, okay, you can walk your 100 meters, and that's it, we're done with you. So I think that's a very big difference.
Yeah, we have a big focus on what the patients want, and what they really want to achieve and how they want to achieve it. And we make our practice after that, yeah.
Another difference that I found between Norway and South Africa was accessibility of physios. Well, in Norway, I've noticed that there are at least a few physios within every community. And of course, we know that health is free. Whereas at home, I'm not sure if there are physios in every single community, but I know most people have to obviously pay for that service and probably have to look for a physio within a nearby community or in the area. I'm not sure. Yeah.
That's actually something we talked about yesterday as well, because you, when you have studied for like 2 years, you are a resource for the community and you work with patients who really need it. And in Norway, as a student, you aren't a resource, a resource because we have so many physiotherapists already. So we get like lighter patients, the one like, oh, my neck is hurting a bit or my back is hurting a bit. So I want someone to look at it, but yeah, I can go to a student, you know? So we are not like really exposed to hard cases before we're finished studying.
Okay.
When you really are a physiotherapist.
Yeah, that's very different.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah, our kind of third year students will arrive on placements and the clinician will say like, here is your caseload. Good luck.
Yeah, because we talked about that yesterday after you went to Sunos, because you guys were more, oh, that's how we know physiotherapy. And we are like, oh, that's a really, really special clinic. Not every physiotherapist in Norway do that. But you were like, oh, but that's what we do every day. And that was really interesting because like a private physiotherapist or something in Norway wouldn't be exposed to that.
Okay.
In the same way as to the bar.
But if I understood you guys right, you also have different patients there. As one of your teachers said, that many patients that only broke a hip or something, that's something big in Norway, but not every patient that breaks a hip get help in South Africa. So it also sounds like you have more of those kinds of patients. So then the students actually have to help there.
We have a lot more patients, a lot more severe injuries, patients that you probably have very little experience of, kind of multiple stab wounds to the chest, spinal cord injuries from gunshot wounds. So lots of, I mean, that's pretty standard. So most of our students would spend most of their time working with those kinds of patients.
And many of us wouldn't even see that in our career.
You could work your whole career and then never see something like that. So I think that's a big difference. I think the level of competence that our physiotherapists graduate with is, I think, pretty good, just because of the exposure to many complex cases that they start seeing from, you know, even the second year, you'd at least be observing the management of those kinds of patients. Is there anything that you wanted to follow up with, Ben?
I'm just interested listening into the conversation, which is great. I suppose I was kind of to come back to the point we sort of touched on right at the start around actual taking part and the internationalisation at home idea. So, you know, it's really clear from the conversation there that there's a lot of reflection happening and kind of thoughts about both the types of patient caseloads that you're seeing and the sort of social political context that patient contact's happening within. Obviously, for the South African students who are there and you're in it, so you're getting like a lot of exposure to this, and that's going to be prompting a whole load of thoughts. How do you think that the rest of your cohort at home, are they going to be interested in hearing about this from you when you get back? And would you have been as interested if you hadn't come on this and then someone came back and tried to tell you about it afterwards?
Yes. So I think this is why the website is quite a big component of the project. I'll talk about that a little bit while you guys gather your thoughts and think about how you're going to spread the word when you get back to Cape Town. So one of the things on the project is that our students are going to be reflecting and writing and sharing some of their ideas on the project website. And so the idea, in theory, is that you know, other students who might be interested in doing this exchange might be able to learn from those reflections. So maybe not this cohort, they may not benefit as much. But in future, if there's another group of students coming to any kind of a Nordic country from South Africa or from Africa, this may be a resource that that they might be able to use and learn from and be better prepared. And I think also just the, you know, there are a few small ideas that I think could go back and could influence the way that we manage our program. Yeah, but the idea is that some of this experience gets translated into a resource, an online resource that other people may be able to use. But have you guys given any thought to, you know, what possible value this might have to other students in the cohort when you go back?
So, I think it's the way that we give the message. I think it's the way that we inform them about our experiences also, because once this trip has ended and we go back, the way we also answer in class now will be, they will take note of that, because they'll say, Belle didn't answer that much before, but now Belle's answering a lot. Does Belle think she knows better, for example? So these are the thoughts that they will have, but it's just all about, in basic terms, remaining humble with your classmates so that as we learn from them, we'd also like them to learn from us as well.
I'm going to suggest that maybe you might kind of consider that in the more long term, on the bigger scale of things, you know, you may be able to have an outsized influence on kind of policy making. So, you know, there's no reason that you can't be a Minister of Health. You know, like, that's a decision that you could make now, that you might want to be able to move through the system and kind of be part of decision making at a higher policy level. So, we don't have any physiotherapists really who are looking at the potential for change at a systemic level. You know, you've seen how a kind of a well-functioning democracy can work, and how kind of decisions made by politicians can have real impacts on the people they serve. You know, this may change how you think about your voting. And so, like, you know, there is change and difference at a bigger scale than you might be thinking about at the moment.
We've just had, I think, our second MP elected who's a physio by background in the UK. So, you know, you can see it is a career option that can open itself up as you go through.
Yeah. Cool.
So can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Have you got time?
Yeah. It's our podcast. We can go as long as you want.
If I'm a physio educator, and if there might be some of the physio educators who listen into this conversation, if you and they may not have like the means, resources to kind of set up an exchange like this, what do you guys think would be like the important aspects that we should be trying to include in the curriculum? Where, you know, to get students thinking about some of the stuff that you've been talking about here in terms of the systemic context and the differences in practice and differences in clinical caseloads between countries. How should we as educators try and do that?
Like in South Africa, we are focused on South Africa's problems, and we are focused on how our environment doesn't enable us as individuals to help a community. But this experience has showed me idealistic ideas that we would have in South Africa. And I think it's more about also, besides us knowing we have problems in South Africa, how do other countries function so that we could move towards having policies like they do, and how their physiotherapists or health faculties in general operate. So I think it's about making health professionals within our classes also aware about other countries' problems and about their progressions as well, so that you can also have an idea that we can progress, whether if it's small or whether it's big scale. So
as a I'm a lecturer in your department, and I want to introduce these kind of aspirational goals where you are thinking, you know, so rather than being stuck in the mindset of practice in South Africa and, you know, worrying about all the problems that we face as part of that system, how do I get you to care about things that are happening in other countries? Like you said, we should do this. But what are the kind of practical ideas that that I might be able to use to get you to get your head out of this kind of very kind of constrained South African context?
Yeah, I think for teachers, one thing that will be really helpful is that upon introduction of something new, instead of just focusing on how the system works in South Africa, they can try and explore the topic or the concept in a broader view. Like, for instance, instead of saying this is how we see patients in South Africa, we can talk about seeing patients in the global view as to, and also explain that in other countries they do it like this. Once I get to know and know the differences between the two, it gets me thinking, but why? Why is it different? If we are working towards the same goal, why do people in Norway do it like this, whereas we are working towards a similar goal? What are we, like, the more question or I start analyzing or noting the difference, the more I will think about it. And as I get to think about it, it opens up my understanding, which in its essence, it allows us to think, just like what this exchange did. Certain things were like a system. One thing with the system is that we just want to maintain. It just wants to maintain. Certain things we never thought of. We never questioned. We just received. As a student, when we are learning, oftentimes we just take what we what we have. We hardly have any, unless it's questionable, unless we have something to compare to. We don't think about it. We're told that this is what you must do, then we just absorb it. Well, just when we are professionals, we just cough it out as it is. But when there are options, that's like, now we have more tools now. Many things to consider. When I look at the patient, now I'm not just considering what I knew or what I'm taught. Now I also consider, there was a student I was shadowing. In Norway, they did it like this. And so the more tools we have, the more we can be able to think of other things.
Okay, I agree with you 100%. But I'm going to go back to my question. You're here, and so you've had this mind-expanding experience that has opened up your view of practice and of patients and of rehab. If I had showed you a video of physiotherapy practice in Norway, so you were still in your classroom at home, and I showed you a video, and we had a conversation, and you read a few resources and a few papers, do you think that that would have had, obviously not the same mind-opening experience, but would it have given you some insight, enough to break you out of that bubble of thinking differently? Like, how do we break it open, that kind of constraint?
I'm not sure about how the movie or like a short story from someone you don't know, it's just person. But I noticed when we were writing the blog posts, then you know it's an actual person writing or reading your post and giving a review, and you actually know you're talking to another person and you get their perspective on the task. So we had the patient's perspective in South Africa and Norway, and reading those were like giving a better impression, and it had a better impact than just reading about this is how it works in South Africa. Then you will forget it easily.
Okay, I just want to stick with this for a little bit, because now this is, so you've done this assignment now where you read something from a South African student, and they've read some of your work, and you've tried to give some kind of feedback to each other. Do you think there would be value in actually speaking to each other?
Yes.
Because I think we, us Norwegians, already have learned so much about South Africa, even though we haven't been there yet, just by talking to you guys. So if we did it like on Skype or just writing posts, it would probably give a better understanding of how it's to live in a different country, working in a different country, than just reading text from people you have no idea who are.
I think that's a good idea. What if you like set up tasks for students to have a Skype call with someone from across the world, and you have your conversation for an hour, a few weeks, and that would be pretty cool. I think you could learn a lot from that, just trading information about each other's systems and how everything works.
And also we had this group discussion with the whole class after writing all the posts, reading the posts, so we can have discussions there as well, so you can learn from each other and how we read the different posts.
Yeah, so we already learned a lot about South African health system and the kind of patients you have and what point of view you have from the blog. But I think we can first understand it like really when we're there and see it with our own eyes and also experience the culture and stuff. So we're really lucky to do that. But I also think that students in Norway could understand much better if they, for example, after the blog, saw some videos of how you practice and have Skype conversations, as you said. So you don't have to go there to understand it more. You can also use videos, for example.
Okay.
I think we also learned quite a lot about how similar it is to be like a young person in South Africa and in Norway. And we have quite a lot in common as well, I think, although the countries are quite different, and so that's interesting, I think.
Yeah, we have much more in common than we would think.
to begin with, we're all human.
Yeah, of course.
Same body.
So I think this has been very valuable. I think we're going to go back to that assignment that we had you do, and I think we're going to make some changes to that just based on some of the conversation that has happened today. So I think that's been really valuable. And I know Ben does also has an internationalization project that he runs out of Oxford Brookes. And I think, I don't know, Ben, has there been anything in this conversation that has kind of changed anything for you?
I mean, I think it's we can say here, because the how that project works is it does use a sort of Skype or something similar to get students talking. I think it's done as a group to group kind of discussion, and I think it works, and it certainly doesn't replicate, you know, the experience that you guys are having right now. But I don't think that needs to be like the expectation of it. But what it does do is it just gets at some of those conversations. But it's been really interesting, certainly, to hear the discussion about the similarity of kind of the clinical practice and the difference of the context, because that's where most of those conversations that we have going. So we have students from Oxford Brookes that might talk to a group of students from Uganda or from Switzerland or from the States, and so we find time and again that actually there's very little difference in terms of what the kind of clinical sort of approach would be, but the how the health system organises around it and what the society expects of it are different each time. You know, so yes, it's kind of reassuring. I think, you know, the thing that that's a one-off thing, it sounds like, from what you guys were saying, there might be value in, you know, building some sort of relationship, and that's certainly something I'll take away and think about as well. But it's really useful to hear your perspectives.
Cool. So we're kind of coming up to the end of the session. I really want to thank you guys for making the time to come and have this conversation. It's been great. I've definitely learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool.